Sí, so.
The moment I wake up, live from New York City, it's the Gary Moore Show. Host, Gary
Noll. Hi everyone, I'm Gary Noll. Today you're going to learn about the power of green leafy vegetables, because they take the prize when it comes to protecting your eyes. New study from Brigham and Women's Hospital. And about 15 other major studies. These are all studies from peer-reviewed literature from respected institutions to show how we can stay healthier longer, prevent and reverse disease. Then we have some interesting audio files. Senator Blumenthal raises concerns on 5G wireless technology. We're going back to sharing more insights. I published an article on Monday of this past week. It's on prn.fm. Download it, read it, and share it everywhere you can. Also, we're going to take a look at the reality of vaccines from Dr. Suzanne Humphreys and a little motivation from Greta Thunberg. She is the young girl who is stimulating the entire youth movement of Europe, not the United States yet, to get out and protest global warming. So we have a lot to share, and I'll be answering some of your questions. We always begin with the latest on health and healing, and we know that glaucoma can cause vision loss or even blindness. But your leafy green vegetables, that would be kale, organic kale, and lettuces, spinach, watercress, arugula, are full of vitamins and minerals that prevent conditions like diabetes and hypertension and heart disease. But then we find that they can actually improve glaucoma. According to a study, is in fact, adding more green vegetables to a person's diet can also significantly lower the risk of developing glaucoma. This was done at Harvard Medical School and Brigham and Women's Hospital and published in the Journal of American Medical Association's Ophthalmology. So just increase your greens. My suggestion is have a green juice. To begin, one a day. Ideally, you should have three a day. That really keeps your blood and your tissues and all of the cells in your body energized, chelated, getting rid of the heavy metals. And celery and cucumber are your best diluting juices. And then for about 1 ounce, you can put in the real strong ones like arugula, watercress, parsley. Then we have, by the way, I also would make sure that you get your broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, cauliflower, and spinach. There's a study out of the University of Edinburgh that talks about vitamin D and how it impacts the immune system. According to this study, scientists have uncovered fresh insights into how vitamin D affects the immune system and might influence susceptibility to multiple sclerosis. Now, vitamin D, as you know, is produced by the body in response to sunlight, and it's often lauded for its health benefits. But it also is a key to the cell's immune system. In fact, this discovery might explain how vitamin D regulates immune reactions that have been implicated in autoimmune diseases like multiple sclerosis. And they focused on vitamin D as a mechanism in the body's immune system, what are called dendritic cells, ability to activate T cells. Now, in healthy people, your T cells play a crucial role in helping to fight infections. In people with autoimmune diseases, however, they can start to attack the body's own tissues. So by studying cells in people and mice, the researchers found vitamin D caused the dendritic cells to produce more of a molecule called CD31 on their surface, and that this hindered the activation of T cells. So one more reason to make sure you're getting your vitamin D every day. Also from Huizong University of Science in China, an article on astragalus. Now, astragalus is A-S-T-R-A-G-A-L-U-S, astragalus. And along with echinacea and podiarco, those are the three that I always recommend people consume when their body has been exhausted, maybe training or racing, working night shifts, working long hours, not getting a good night's sleep. Always good to start your day by putting those in your protein shake. Now, one of those, astragalus, is shown to improve symptoms of pulmonary arterial hypertension. Now, that's important. And astragalus has been used in Chinese medicine for thousands of years, and its medicinal effects have been backed by good quality peer-reviewed scientific studies. In a new study, a team of Chinese researchers discovered that the polysaccharides derived from astragalus can be used to improve the symptoms of pulmonary arterial hypertension. And this is about 200 milligrams per kilogram of astragalus polysaccharide once every 2 days for 2 weeks, and it made a big difference. We've got millions of Americans suffering from this, so that would be good to add. And it's non-toxic. This was published in the American Journal of Chinese Medicine. Now, from Stanford University comes a study, again, about vitamin D. But this one shows when you're deficient, when you don't have enough, it can promote the spread of some breast cancers. So, it's not hard to get 3,000 to 5,000 units of vitamin D a day. If you just went out into the sun and had half your body exposed for 20 minutes, you'll produce over 10,000 units of vitamin D. So there's really no reason that we should be having these problems, but we are, and that's not good. So a deficiency in vitamin D is associated with tumor progression and metastasis in breast cancer, according to this new study. And this was published in the journal Endocrinology. So get your vitamin D, and especially if you have breast cancer. Also, I know people, several of my friends, like to stay up late at night. One of them doesn't go to bed before about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And hence he eats late, doesn't have a good breakfast in the morning. But there are thousands upon thousands of people in every city who stay up late and eat late. According to the latest Sao Paulo State University published in the European Journal of Preventive Cardiology, that's the Journal of the European Society of Cardiology, a late dinner and no breakfast is a killer combination. So people who skip breakfast and eat dinner near bedtime have worse outcomes after a heart attack. That's the research. In fact, this study found that people with the two eating habits had a 500% higher likelihood of death, another heart attack, or angina, which is chest pain, within 30 days after a hospital discharge for a heart attack. This was the first study to evaluate these unhealthy behaviors in patients with acute coronary syndromes. So skipping breakfast was not a good idea. Eating late, not a good idea. In fact, the earlier you eat dinner, the healthier it is for you. Also, the Cleveland Clinic, as well as the UCLA, did a study. And they found that neutralizing the breakdown of gut microbes may be the key to maintaining a healthy heart. How? A compound found in olives, olive oil, balsamic vinegars, and grapeseed oils, known as DMB, can alter gut microbes in a way that might help prevent heart disease. So when you go to the European, at least the Western European area, the Mediterranean, you find that they're using red wine, organic, sulfate-free, which is very low alcohol, olives and olive oil. It's completely common sitting at a table which everything is served in different dishes, one dish at a time, generally small dishes. And if you, the first time you're in Europe and you eat at not a westernized restaurant, but a traditional restaurant, you find these relatively small plates. You get the antipasto, you might get some grilled eggplant, grilled onion, grilled mushroom, grilled asparagus. Then you might get a salad. Then you get a plate of olives. You might have 15 different types of olives on that plate. And they give you a little cup. It's the middle of the table, and it's filled with this dark, crude oil. That's extra virgin, first-pressing olive oil. It hasn't been filtered. And that's where they'll take their homemade breads and sop it in there and eat it. So they're loaded with these particular chemicals that help protect them from atherosclerosis, which is hardening of the arteries. And that's important. So the more we go towards the Mediterranean diet and we get away from our eggs and meat and high-fat dairy products, the healthier the microorganisms in our guts are, and that results in a healthier relationship with our heart. Also, from McMaster's University, which is in Canada, a major study finds 1 in 5 children with mental health problems. Just think of that, 1 in 5. Now, I would question that because of the following. When I was growing up, we didn't have any mental health problems in kids. We had no kids committing suicide and no kids committing mass murder because we didn't have diagnoses like ADHD and ADD. We didn't have all these vaccines. We didn't have autism spectrum disorder. Remember, it's a spectrum, which means it can go from almost imperceptible to full-blown Asperger's and clear off the chart in rage. So somewhere on that chart you can be. And we in America tend to find drugs that are then created, patented, and marketed. Then we create a disease to match the profitability and marketing of the drug. It was not uncommon if I was in a boring class in high school or junior high school to just to look out the window and daydream. And I would sit there and write out ideas and do my little inventions. In fact, I just came across a couple of my inventions this morning. I opened up a box and there was my old magnetic headrest, a magnetic chi belt, a magnetic, there was a magnetic pants, and I invented those. This is before anyone else had done anything with magnets. I'd written a book on healing with magnets. And where there were no researchers in the United States, over 500 separate scientific studies on the power of magnets. And then I decided, well, gee whiz, I'm doing all this marathon, sometimes as many as 6 marathons a year, every other month, plus all the other races in between. My legs were taking a beating. So you could get a massage, but that's, you know, that lasts about 3 or 4 hours. So what I did is came up with the idea of magnets. And I put 200 magnets at 10,000 gauss, that's the power, the geodymians, and I sewed them into a mattress cover. And the moment I would sleep on that, I would wake up refreshed with no aches and pains. And then I said, well, if I can do it at night, why can't I do it when I go off for a run? So I actually tried running. It didn't work so well with magnets. Because they stuck together. So that took a lot of engineering to get them not to. Changed the type of magnet to make it more flexible, because mine were a little stationary hard magnets. In any case, I came up with the running pants that actually had magnets in it, so they were pulsing to keep the cells in equilibrium and greater oxygenation within the cells. A whole lot of good comes from magnets. Anyway, I just came across that this morning and said, wow, that brings back memories from 40 and 30 years ago. In any case, the point of the exercise is that I would spend a lot of time daydreaming, and I'm quite sure today I would be diagnosed with, Gary, you're distracted. You need to see the school psychologist. The psychologist, Gary, do you ever fidget? Are you ever restless? Gary, yeah, when I have a boring teacher. Well, no, that means that you have a brain chemical imbalance, and we're going to have to put you on Ritalin. What's Ritalin? Well, it's in the same class as cocaine. And it can really screw your brain up and your biochemistry. You'll lose weight. You won't have an appetite. You can become psychotic. You can even become suicidal. But at least you won't be daydreaming and distracted from the class. We have over 8 million children diagnosed with ADD and ADHD. How many of them have simply not had a good night's sleep, are distracted by events and relationships and activities outside of the class, versus how many actually have some form of brain disordered condition? Probably 5%. That means 95% are getting a diagnosis they don't have. So the idea that we have all these children, 1 in 5 or 20%, that are suffering from mental health problems, it's not a mental health problem. It's a family relationship problem. It's the lack of proper parental guidance, frequently not having a father and mother both giving you the time and attention, discipline, and direction that is needed. And yet we're afraid to look at these issues, because then we'd have to look at parenting in general, the reasons people get pregnant to begin with, and how many people today have a child not because they want to spend quality time helping that child through all their transitions until they can go out on their own, but instead they're a trophy. It's hard for us to wrap our mind around the idea that we do something so self-absorbed and selfish, narcissistic. But if you want to know why we have so many children who are not mentally imbalanced, they're emotionally maladaptive. It's because their parents are emotionally maladaptive. Look at the parent, then look at the child. Look at the narcissism in this family that, you know, got their two daughters on a rowing team at Stanford when they had never rowed in their life. Faked it all. Kids are out there in a rowing outfit, and do you think that's not going to be coming up with criminal charges? Of course it is. But why would you need to cheat? Because you could afford to? Because it enhanced whose image? Who benefited from that? The daughters going to Stanford, or the parents saying, my daughters go to Stanford, they're on the rowing team? Yeah, because you paid to get them in. You took a corrupted system and contributed to it. And every day this is done, every single day, in every way, in every town in America. So we wonder why we have kids who've got problems. They don't have mental health problems. They have maladaptive family developmental problems. Maybe we should put a moratorium on people having children so they understand what the consequences of being a bad parent are. Next up, I want to look at the screen teens are associated with behavior problems and preschoolers. Yes, that's correct. Screen time, how much time they watch, television or computer or cell phone, according to the University of Alberta, is directly associated with how misbehaving they're going to be. In preschoolers, 2,400 families suggest that among preschoolers, spending 2 hours or more at screen time per day is linked to clinically significant behavioral problems. Yeah. Because they're not functioning in the real world in real time. They're not functioning with real kids and real people in playtime. Instead, everything is either animated or it is hyper unrealistic to the real world. So it creates dysfunction, creates an unrealistic world as they grow, and then they just become more addicted to it. Finally, the National Institutes of Chemical Pharmaceutical Research in Romania found that the great willow herb is a terrific antidote in therapies against multi-drug-resistant bacteria. Now, I've mentioned many times that we have people who have lowered immune system, and then they get, their arms are resting on a chair in a hospital, and next thing you know, they've got MRSA, on their skin. And that's unfortunate, because there are very few antibiotics that can actually kill that. Well, according to this Open Chemistry research article, there's this, what many people consider a weed. Why? Because it has strong anti-inflammatory and antioxidant properties. The willow herb has got a great reputation if you have problems with your prostate gland and your urinary tract. So new studies confirm that combining some of the commonly used ingredients of great willow herb extracts can be beneficial in treating bacterial and fungal infections as well. So that's something to consider. And I'm Gary Nall, and that's the latest on health and healing. We're coming back in a moment. We're going to go right into your questions. We're 20 minutes into our program. Please stay with us.
Hi, this is a message for Gary Nall. Hi, Gary. Can you discuss in your program the problems of the GMO trees, genetically modified trees?
Well, there are a lot of genetically modified trees. The most common in the last 5 years have been apples. And the reason that these so-called Alaskan apples are superior is because they don't turn brown or oxidize as fast as just a regular apple would. Now, of course, if you're eating an apple or if you're having an apple in a relatively short period of time, an hour after it's open, that's not a problem. Or if you just want to spray lemon juice on it, which I do frequently when I'm making, let's say, like a salad that has apple, I'll just spray lemon juice. That prevents it from turning brown and oxidizing. That's a big issue because we're not being told which of these fruits and vegetables, like there's papaya that's genetically grown, pineapple genetically grown, apples, and now we have trees themselves. Instead of using the old grafting methods to create stronger, more hardier trees, they're using genes. And there's a gene technique that's called CRISPR, C-R-I-S-P-R. And all the findings I'm looking at in the scientific literature shows that the safety of this gene editing crop, whatever it might be, is not reliable. So remember, whatever you do when you engineer a gene, when you alter the DNA, and that's what you're really doing. I'll give you an example of this. Let's just say that there's a study, and you want to see the outcomes in cells when the CRISPR system was used to knock out a gene function by disrupting its normal base unit sequence. And this disruption takes the form of DNA base unit insertions and deletions, what are called indels. And indels, I-N-D-E-L-S, are produced by the DNA repair process known as non-homogeneous end joining, or N-H-E-J, which gets activated in order to repair the cut ends of the DNA molecule once the CRISPR has made its double-strand DNA break. But instead of this going smoothly, more often than not, it does not. And you have all kinds of problems. The trouble is, when do you find out you have a problem? After the fact. When did we find out that we had a problem with any of our genetic creations? After the fact, after they had been planted, like weeds that are insecticides and they go onto the weeds and pesticides and weed killers, and then suddenly we end up with a super weed, a weed we've never seen before, a weed that's so strong that a normal lawnmower can't cut it. And yet that's what's happening everywhere. So I'm very concerned. I'm concerned about genes going into a human. Have you seen any of the genes in pigs or cattle? They look like super muscular, grotesquely over-muscled animals. And because they're sold by the pound, by weight, a muscle weighs more than fat. So now you're getting more profit, but you're completely distorting the animal. And once the human eats that meat, then it changes the entire expression of the genome in the body. There's no studies ever done, ever, not one, to say if you eat these genetically modified foods, if you eat these apples from these genetically modified trees, these genetically modified berries from these genetically modified raspberries, or blackberries, or blueberry bushes, that somehow it will not adversely affect your cells. There's no such study. Wouldn't you think that would have been the first thing they would have done? But in the case of Roundup glyphosate, all the studies were done for 3 months only. Now, no one caught this. It was just the industry standard. Well, we found no tumors. We found no pathological conditions in any of the rat studies, and they were correct. But a Dr. Seralini decided what would happen if we simply studied the rat for its entire life, a year, year and a half, or 2 years, depending on the breed of rat. That's what they did. So it was after 3 months that these mammary tumors and other abnormalities began to happen in a high percentage of the rats with massive tumors. Tumors as large as the rat's rest of the body. Could you imagine having a leg that has a tumor the size of the rest of the body? That's what they were saying. And then there was every effort by Monsanto to attack Seralini and another Scottish scientist who was doing a study for the European Union on the safety of genetically modified foods. And they both came back. And no, it was on the maize, I believe, that the rats were fed. But it had glyphosate in it. In any case, the article was published, then it was retracted. And then it was published again, and then Seralini sued the people for slandering him, and he won in a French court. But that didn't make any headlines that he won, and his article was republished. But now Monsanto's lost three suits, one in France last week. About 3 months ago, they lost a suit for cancer, lymphoma, and then about 5 months ago, they lost a suit for over $200 million, brought down to about, I think, $70, $80 million. And that time there were suddenly 14,000 lawsuits. Now I believe there's double that amount. So wasn't the smartest move for buyer to buy Monsanto. So here's the takeaway message. Trust nothing that is genetically modified. Nothing. Because they haven't done the research to prove long-term outcomes. Okay? Now, let's go from there. To listening to this young person. I believe she's 16. When I first heard her, she was 15. She's a teenager, but she is the single most powerful voice for the youth in the world, and she is not abiding by any principles of political etiquette. She's letting him have it. This is at Davos just this year. This is Greta Thunberg, Thunberg.
I'm 60 years old, I come from Sweden, and I want you to panic. I want you to act as if the house was on fire. I have said those words before, and a lot of people has explained why that is a bad idea. A great number of politicians have told me that panic never leads to anything good, and I agree. To panic, unless you have to, is a terrible idea. But when your house is on fire and you want to keep your house from burning to the ground, then that does require some level of panic. Our civilization is so fragile, it is almost like a castle built in the sand. The facade is so beautiful, but the foundations are far from solid. We have been cutting so many corners. Yesterday, the world watched with despair and enormous sorrow how the Notre Dame burnt in Paris. Some buildings are more than just buildings. But the Notre Dame will be rebuilt. I hope that its foundations are strong. I hope that our foundations are even stronger. But I fear they are not. Around the year 2030, 10 years, 259 days, and 10 hours away from now, we will be in a position where we set off an irreversible chain reaction that will most likely lead to the end of our civilization as we know it. That is, unless in that time, permanent and unprecedented changes in all aspects of society have taken place, including a reduction of our CO2 emissions by at least 50%. And please note that these calculations are depending on inventions that have not been yet invented at scale. Inventions that are supposed to clear our atmosphere of astronomical amounts of carbon dioxide. Furthermore, do these calculations not include unforeseen tipping points and feedback loops, like the extremely powerful methane gas escaping from rapidly thawing Arctic permafrost? Nor do they include already locked-in warming hidden by air pollution, nor the aspect of equity or climate justice clearly stated throughout the Paris Agreement, which is absolutely necessary to make it work on a global scale. We must also bear in mind that these are just calculations, estimations. That means that these points of no return may occur a bit sooner or later than that. No one can know for sure. We can, however, be certain that they will occur approximately in these time frames. Because these calculations are not opinions or wild guesses. These projections are backed up by scientific facts concluded by all nations through the IPCC. Nearly every major national scientific body around the world unreservedly supports the work and findings of the IPCC. We are in the midst of the sixth mass extinction, and the extinction rate is up to 10,000 times faster than what is considered normal, with up to 200 species becoming extinct every single day. Erosion of fertile topsoil, deforestation of our great forests, toxic air pollution, loss of insects and wildlife, the acidification of our oceans. These are all disastrous trends being accelerated by a way of life that we, here in our financially fortunate part of the world, see as our right to simply carry on.
That was Greta Thunberg. We're getting her to appear on the program in a progressive commentary hour for an hour, so you'll be able to hear her in depth. By the way, she was able to rally 1.2 million teenage students to go out on strike for a day in order to protest global warming and our inaction. In the United States, the movement was here a little less. We had five people show up at the UN. I was there. I filmed them, spoke with them. They were dedicated. They were informed. And five people. She had 1.2 million. So we clearly have priorities that are more important. And that priority, I'm seeing things I've never seen before. For example, and this will give you an idea, because I'm out here filming what will be the most comprehensive, in-depth look at our environment, and global warming is one part of that environment. and you'll see that when the film is released later in about 3 or 4 months. But there's a video that's terrifying to watch. It's about walruses, hundreds of them, literally jumping off of cliffs to their deaths. That's right, you heard me correct. The global warming is changing their habitat, and so they're starving. And so they're going off this 250-foot high cliff, one at a time, all day long. And there's a video showing them going up, going over. They know what they're doing. So we don't have a focus upon loving animals. We love our dogs and cats and birds, but we don't love other animals because we eat the other animals. We allow them to be put into factory farms. But now we're seeing all these other unusual circumstances. Do you remember the film Old Yeller? Y-E-L-L-E-R. That was that beautiful dog, Labrador, I believe, that dies at the end of the film. And people kind of turn their eyes away from that. But you cannot and should not turn your eyes away from the suffering of so many species that are going extinct. 250 species every 24 hours go extinct. You look at China, and China has some of the most advanced technological phenomena in the world. You look at Dubai, the architectural marvels that they have built there, and yet people are eating dogs and cats. They're killing off the rhinoceroses too, so they can grind down their horn as if somehow there's some magic, you know, aphrodisiac in the horn. There is not. Or tigers' kidneys, and there's not. Or a cobra's heart, and there is not. So you're looking at a paradox of duality. Superstition in beliefs and things that have no basis in reality, and then high-end utilization of the left-brain technocratic mindset, where there's technology without humanistic values. There's no spiritual balance. It's like Lady Justice that's blind and has the two scales. We have intentionally blinded ourselves to the consequences of our choices, our lifestyle, what we purchase, what we eat, what we drink, where we live, how much we consume, and we become preoccupied, so preoccupied with our feelings that we forget about the feelings and reality of others in this world. And it's coming down around us. I mean, everywhere we look. Look, just yesterday in Libya, in Tripoli, there were 180 dead and 800 injured in General Haftar's assaults. Haftar was someone that Gaddafi had thrown out of the country. And then he came back when the UN and coalition forces were attacking Libya over no other reason than that they didn't want. They wanted his oil, which they got, and they didn't want him getting the African Union to go towards a gold denier value system instead of the U.S. dollar as the currency of exchange. It was that simple. This all came out in WikiLeaks articles. You don't see any irony in those who participated in the media, including Amy Goodman at Democracy Now. You don't see anyone apologizing and saying, my God, look at what we did to the jewel of Africa. Of all the countries in Africa, look what we did to the best, the longest lived, the most educated, the most free, the most rights, the highest level of social standing for women, the most literate, high literacy rate, in more so than in the United States, more so than Great Britain, more so than France. Isn't it interesting? The very country that they would attack and have us believe that the people are illiterate are actually more educated than the average person in any of these developed countries. Now look at Libya. You see, we have no irony in being complicit in all the problems that we've created. They'll just see this as, oh, you know, one group trying to take over from a UN-recognized government of national accord that was itself fully corrupt. Is there any irony in Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton or the other neocon fascists that supported this? Not at all. You've got guys running around to be on television to be the next president. You've got a guy, what was his name? Buttigieg, B-U-T-T-I-G-I-E-G, I believe that's it. He praised Israeli security response for, what do you call it, moving for killing Palestinians. And he then yelled at the Democrats for judging that. Wow. Another puppet of Israel. No irony there, is there? And so we have consequences to that. You know, we have consequences to everything. Did you ever hear the woman? Her name is Carol Cadwalader. That's C-A-R-O-L-E-C-A-D-W-A-L-L-A-D-R. She was just in a TED Talk this past Monday, and she criticized the hell out of the tech companies for breaking liberal democracy. She reported blowing the lid off the Cambridge Analytica scandal. Remember that? Which revealed that Facebook had made a data on tens of millions of Americans accessible to the political consulting firm. In her speech, she actually criticized Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg and Twitter's CEO Jack Dorsey for being handmaidens to authoritarianism. When was the last time anyone in the media had the courage to say that the leaders of these two organizations were handmaidens to authoritarianism? You know what the irony of it is? Sitting in the audience was Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey hearing himself be excoriated. Well, good for her. Did the media play any? Did you see any clip of it? Did you hear about it? Not a word. Only those people lucky enough to be at that TED Talk heard it. So, hence, there is no negative consequence to being a censoring, fascistic-based, police state-embedded media platform. Google, Facebook, Twitter, and, of course, the worst of the worst, and most utterly contemptible, Wikipedia. No consequence to what they do. Even the human rights organizations are now seen as part of the problem because they're more interested in funding themselves. The head of a hunger project is making $250,000 a year. Doesn't it seem a little ironic that a person who is trying to find money and ways of feeding the hunger is making enough money that he could feed himself for the rest of his life? It's just wrong. But almost everything we're doing today is wrong. And there's no consequence. That's what this young lady is saying. She's saying there should be a consequence. And she's talking about the environment. But you can't have a polluted environment if you don't have a polluted body politic, because your body politic would protect the environment. I remember once, I'll give you an example. I went over to New Jersey in the mid-1970s. I wanted to buy a farm. And then my vision was to turn it into a farm exactly as it was originally built. You know, something very bucolic and beautiful, red barn, farmhouse, organic gardens. And instead, what I found was old, broken-down dairy farms and other farms that were selling at outrageous amounts of money and weren't selling small. They were selling the whole 200, 300, 400 acres for five-acre lot developments. So I remember talking with one of the farmers, and I said, you realize that this magnificent piece of property you have, you could do a lot of other things with it outside of dairying, but if you sell this, they're going to come in here, and it's all the trees are going to be cut down, and all you're going to have is one house looking on top of another house below it, looking on top of another house, looking on top of the... And that's Orwellian. He says, no, it's good money. He was right. I was right. He won. Everywhere we look, we're tearing down nature, tearing down trees. Now, the person who's going to have the mansion may believe in global warming, but they're not going to believe that they should be the one sacrificing the destruction of the land so they can build their mega McMansion with spoiled brat children and a cosmetically enhanced partner so that they can keep on the greed mill that they've been on their entire careers. That's what we're seeing. There's no consequence to greed. There's no consequence to avarice. There's no consequence to stupidity. There's no consequence to the vile and corrupt system by which we live and all of our institutions are complicit. 541,000 injuries have been submitted to the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, no consequence. The CDC vaccine schedule has never once in its history been tested for safety, no consequence. The surveillance program of the CDC proves that vaccines do not guarantee immunity up to 55% of the time, no consequence. 8,500 children have been killed by vaccines since 1990, no consequence. The CDC says a baby should have 26 vaccinations before their immune system is even mature enough to benefit from the vaccine, no consequence. $4 billion has been paid to families for injuries caused by vaccines through the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, no consequence. The FDA and CDC say that mercury, aluminum, aborted human fetal cells, baby cow blood, dog cells, monkey cells, and known carcinogens are all safe for a baby. And 900,000 doctors and 6 million scientists refuse to look for the truth in that gigantic lie. No consequence. So if there is no consequence to all of these regular occurrences, then how exactly are we going to mitigate environmental destruction coming at us? Now, let's go over and hear from another audio clip. This is Senator Blumenthal raising questions about 5G wireless technology and the health risks at a Senate hearing.
In this hearing, we've heard from a lot of witnesses from you today and others previously about the very important potential of 5G technology. It promises to bring us a new era of connectivity with internet speeds as much as 5 times faster than what we have today, with much lower latency, and that's all a good thing. But 5G, as you well know, also uses higher frequency waves that don't travel as far and will rely on a network of hundreds of thousands, potentially millions of small cell sites. And the question then is, are there any health implications, any public safety implications to those additional sites that are likely to be located close to homes, schools, workplaces, and closer and closer to the ground? Correct?
Correct, Senator. Yes.
So in December of 2018, I sent a letter to FCC Commissioner Carr asking him to cite for me recent scientific studies demonstrating the safety of this technology. What research has been done? Where has it been published and compiled? He has essentially failed to do so, and just echo the general statements of the FDA, which shares regulatory responsibility for cell phones with the FCC. If you go to the FDA website, pretty unsatisfactory. There basically is a cursory and superficial citation to existing scientific data saying, quote, the FDA has urged the cell phone industry to take a number of steps, including support additional research on possible biological effects of radio frequency fields for the type of signal emitted by cell phones. I believe that Americans deserve to know what the health effects are, not to prejudge what scientific studies may show, and they deserve also a commitment to do the research on outstanding questions. So my question for...
Bring it down. Here is the problem. This is what happens when people are not well informed as legislators, when they're sitting on a committee and right in front of them are all of the telecom giants at the same table, just like the tobacco industry representatives or big pharma representatives. First of all, the people who come are all pro-industry. Behind them are their lawyers and scientists. So when they stop for a moment, turn around, and ask someone behind them to give them an answer, that happens every other second in these. The legislators are only only superficially prepared. He knows that there's some concerns. Let me tell you what we found and what's in our article. First of all, we have 67 pages of scientific references. We found 10,000 articles. He can't find one. And not a single person from the telecom industry will find one because they haven't done the research. So if you haven't done the research on the long-term health effects, even short-term health effects on children who have thinner skulls and therefore holding a cell phone to their brain or sleeping with a cell phone under their pillow, what will it do? The industry is not going to open a door that within the nomenclature of law, you never open a door unless you know what the coming back on the other side of that door will mean. Because when you open it up, if you did the studies and they came out negative and you were before a hearing and someone says, have you done any studies at all? You'd have to say yes. Were those positive or negative? You'd have to answer. So what happens is that independent sciences at universities have done the research, 10,000 studies, and they're all negative, meaning it impacts electromagnetic pulses, impact your heart, your central nervous system, your brain, your eyes. They can increase cancer, arrhythmias, tachycardia. They can disrupt your hormones. They can destroy plants and trees and wildlife. Everything you can imagine being bad is. In fact, one school found that four cancers in kids who had no cancer-producing lifestyle, and yet they got it, and they found it was the tower outside, the very same identical tower they're going to be putting on every block in America. You're going to see all the trees cut down on blocks because they want a straight line of vision because these signals are deflected when you come to trees and trunks and leaves, branches, hedges. And so they're putting them on tops of buildings, but they only have around a 320-foot range. Well, that's not much. That's not even a city block. So when I was going around this past Sunday, I was going around Central Park, up at 110th Street, I looked up, and there we looked. And we counted all of these G5 antennas on all these buildings, sometimes three or four on a building, and they're all dangerous. This is the single most dangerous common-use technology the world has ever seen. We're going to have massive health problems, massive, on a scale we have never had before in our history. This is a form of technological genocide that we're looking at right now. So we wrote an article, definitive article. It was posted on PRN.fm. It has all the scientific references. So if this legislator, well-intended, and to get the answers, but he's not going to get the answers from the people in front of him because it wouldn't be in their interest. These are the people actually creating the technology and using it, and therefore they're not going to indict themselves. I want you to know the truth, and hopefully you'll take the time to read up on this, just like I hope you take the time to read up on our articles on GMOs, take the fifth time to read 52 peer-reviewed articles on with the science from peer-reviewed journals on vaccines, their dangers. If it's something that harms us, we're writing about it, we're publishing on it, we're broadcasting on it, we're doing documentaries on it. So go to our website and take a look. We're out of time, everyone. Thank you very much for listening. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day.